Ingram Smith, Bud Elliott, back again for another episode of the Nolcast. Bud, have something a little bit planned differently today, and the fact that we're going to devote a lot of our focus and conversation towards recruiting, but the talk that we do have and look back at a Florida State game is one of a complete game and one of their more convincing victories of the last two seasons. So we'll spend a little bit of time on that. And when I say a little bit of time, I'm serious, but we'll look back at the BC game briefly, but otherwise try to give people a pretty comprehensive idea as far as what Florida State's recruiting board looks like as they enter very much kind of the final stretch of the 2017 class. So before we get into that, we want to start where we do every time, and that is with our sponsors, Louisiana Hot Sauce.
That's right, Ingram. A Louisiana Hot Sauce. One drop will do you, but if you want to go a couple more, that's fine too. It's just great stuff, man. Aged peppers, vinegar, salt. No added ingredients, no carbs. Also, a really nice item to have at Thanksgiving, especially if you're at a Thanksgiving where, you know, maybe the turkey's not quite as well cooked as you'd like it to be.
Or too well cooked. Absolutely.
Yeah, for sure. Oh, I didn't mean underdone. I just meant not quality.
Understood. Not to where you would like it. Absolutely. Yeah. Nobody's advocating less than well cooked turkey here. I'll tell you, I continue to use it as a marinade is probably one of my favorite things. Did some chicken thighs yesterday. Cut a lime. Put four chicken thighs into a bowl, a little bit of Louisiana hot sauce, and 90 minutes later had an incredible meal that was cheap as could be. And it's just a fantastic way to supplement darn near anything that you end up putting on your dinner table. So keep it in mind. A lot of you guys have given us an incredible amount of feedback in the form of social media interaction, pictures of purchases, pictures of how you use it. That is incredibly just incredibly generous of you guys and very much appreciated on our end. So always want to start by showing appreciation to the people who make this podcast possible and allow us to have thorough conversations about where Florida State football is currently. And Bud, thought you did a fantastic job on the Boston College Instant Reaction podcast. So would point people in that direction. For most of our commentary about that game, why don't we try something different, put ourselves on the clock, and literally give us, I'm going to give us 4 minutes, Bud, to look back at this BC game before we transition into a full-fledged look at what Florida State's recruiting looks like. And we're starting
Louisiana Hot Sauce rapid recap. Let's go. Fun facts here. Following this game, DeAndre Francois is actually seventh nationally. In interception avoidance as a percentage. So interception percentage, that's a pretty cool stat.
That is a little bit surprising to me, but when you think about it, his problems really haven't been interceptions. And a term that we've used in the past day or so when we've talked about this privately is one that comes from baseball. And I don't think it's too much of a reach to say that Francois is kind of effectively wild when it comes to interceptions. And when he misses, he tends to miss by a margin that really nobody's catching the ball. And for the most part, he's gotten better about making decisions with the ball. Been bailed out by some dropped interceptions, but over the course of the season, that's going to happen to just about anybody. So that's an encouraging little statistic when you look at the evolution of your freshman quarterback.
It really is. You're right. And typically when he throws a ball, that's not a good ball. Nobody has a chance to catch it. So that actually is kind of cool. Ingram, you want to guess the success rate Boston College had in the second and third quarters?
Ooh, yeah, normally our guesses haven't been too good. I'm going to go 8%, bud.
Look, I know that they weren't very good, but you got to go a little bit lower than that.
4.5.
I'm going to need you to go a little bit lower.
Good Lord. 2.
Got to be a little lower.
Still overshooting it, huh? I'm going to go with 1%. And at that, I don't know how much more room I have to go down.
Ingram, unfortunately here, they posted the rare 0% success rate on offense in the second and third quarters. Far different. In the first quarter, they started out like a house fire, 38%. But then it just crashed
into the ground. Then it all crashed down. Did it have anything to do with them running goal line package from their own 25 on first down? That's a good look.
You got to fire him, right? Look. If you're Boston College, like you got to figure out a way to get that dude out of there.
If not so much for performance, for just aesthetics. I mean, it is a product that is damn near impossible to consume visually. It's disgusting. It is.
Boston College had a 7% success rate on passing downs. So when the play action and run threats were no longer a threat, 7%. Also, the old 9% success passing the football on the day. Not really the best. And they had an incredible 11.7 yards per possession.
11.7 yards per possession? That is, that is... I mean, we've had some interesting stat talk over the past weeks, but that is humiliating as anything that I've heard, but not really surprising when you think about what we took in on Friday night.
Yeah, exactly. That and look, not that Florida State's offense was amazing, but it was a whole lot better. Boston College is kind of embarrassing to the conference. Like, you can't put that product on national TV. That looks like shit. And they've done it twice on Friday nights where games have an exclusive window. And granted, I don't think they do great ratings on Friday night anyway, but tell me, if you're a fan of a team other than Florida State or Boston College, how many quarters of that did you watch?
Not unless you just despise Florida State, but even to that point, it became pretty clear that was not going to turn out well for you. And yeah, I mean, I'm a diehard fan. I've consumed probably every play that Florida State has had from scrimmage since I was 7 years old. That game at times was tough to really pay attention to. It's just it's a product that's hard to sell, and I agree with what you said. As far as just from a conference standpoint, that's really hard to kind of push your cards into the table and say, hey, here's our primetime matchup where we're featuring Florida State and a school that doesn't much have an interest in playing offense whatsoever.
It's just half the game. I mean, well, like more like 40%. I mean, if you figure
it's just 40% of the game.
Stuff. Yeah,
exactly. We'll let it slide.
How much time we got? I
think with that probably brings stop the timer 20 seconds ago. So that will be our Boston College look back. And as I said, Bud, I think you did 27, 28 minutes on the instant and would point people in that direction for a more exhaustive review of one of Florida State's more convincing victories in two seasons or so.
I appreciate that. And I've completed the film review. That should be up on TomahawkNation.com. And I got to tell you, didn't learn a whole lot about this team from this game, and would caution people to be – I don't think all the defensive issues are fixed, right? Like, Boston College is that bad. And don't lose sight of that. We talked about this, by the way, Ingram, what, a month ago? Said, hey, you have got to remember the quality of competition that FSU's about to face here, because they're about to face some bad offenses, specifically Wake Forest and Boston College. And it's important to separate that from the perceived defensive improvement.
We did talk about that. Certainly the stretch here is as weak as anything that we'll find. And you're right. It does need to be in the back of people's heads when they watch this and try to come to a conclusion as the evolution of units and their progression throughout the course of the year. I think we had talked about that. And I think that is just the eyeball test in general. It's tough to look at that team and think that they're anywhere on par with some of the teams that you saw the first 5-6 weeks. And I'm not even saying similar teams. I mean, even like, it's hard to look at BC and really think that they're a power five team. That's just a really pathetic excuse for fielding a football team. And, Boston College is not a national like power historically, but that's a program that has some decent things to sell and is in a decent market. And granted, and certainly college football is not their first priority or focus, but you would think that you'd be able to think that that program would be able to carry a little bit more more water for the conference. So interesting to see what happens there. But I think we're in complete agreement that that is a product that is that's hard to be proud of, and hard for either the conference or the institution, I would imagine, to continue going in the same direction for long.
Yeah, you want to talk recruiting?
Let's talk recruiting, man. It's always an interesting conversation, and Florida State, always ends up recruiting fairly well, and has a strong class, and has always had a strong class under Jimbo Fisher. And this year looks no different. It's certainly going to be a good class, but how good and how many needs are really filled will still be dictated to an extent by how they close. So we'll just try to give people as good of an idea as far as what's out there, where Florida State stands, and we'll do the old position by position as we are wont to do. So with that, Bud, let's acknowledge kind of where Florida State is nationally, and then we'll move into looking at what they've done at quarterback so far.
Sure thing. If you go by the 247 composite, which, look, is not perfect. It certainly has flaws. But I feel like it does a decent job of blending the four major services out there, being ESPN, Scout, Rivals, and 247. Florida State is eighth nationally. They have a 57% blue chip ratio, which is pretty similar to what they've signed over the last 4 years. Their rivals, if you look at it, Clemson is seventh with a 79% ratio. So pretty big gap between Clemson's class and Florida State's class this year. Miami is 14th, but they only have a 25% ratio, and that kind of tells you they even at this point in the season, how many kids you take has a significant impact on your recruiting ranking. Now, closer to signing day, the number of kids in a class gets a little bit more homogenous, and at that point, the quality of the class starts to stand out more. So Miami has 20 commits, Florida State has 14, but Florida State already has more 4- and 5-star kids than Miami does. The Gators are 18th, but they actually have a 53% ratio. So they're kind of right there with FSU ratio-wise, 53 versus 57. Miami is the one outlier that is not necessarily getting in on the elite kids quite as much as I'm sure their fans hope they would have under Mark Richt. But they have got some kids to visit, so that's kind of the first step is to get the studs to visit. On a national level, it's Alabama and Ohio State this year, just way out in front of everybody else. Nothing even really close, and nobody else has a shot at number one other than the Buckeyes and the Tide. Probably the Buckeyes, who statistically might be landing the best class ever. Georgia and LSU are battling, in my opinion, for that number three spot. I don't really think anybody else can come up and catch them. Kirby Smart and his staff have done a tremendous job recruiting. You get that first-year bump. You get that new coach excitement. There's a lot of buzz around Georgia right now on the recruiting trail, despite the fact that that their season has not gone all that well. So the best I think Florida State could do this year would be fifth, but there's not a ton of buzz around FSU right now, and that's probably related to them taking 2 years off from being in the playoff race. They were eliminated, I think, fairly early last year and very early this year. So, they're still seen as an elite program, but perhaps not quite on that super, super top tier, I guess, if you want. But they're still doing a good job.
Interesting to hear that. That's somewhat expected with some of the new hires. LSU is interesting to me that they've been able to hold that together and still have the number fourth class. Is that something that you expect to close for them to be able to close with a class ranked like that, despite having a little bit of ambiguity as far as who's going to be their head coach?
Yeah, I do, because I think if they went out, and there's a decent chance they went out, I think they're going to hire Ed Orgeron. So that's certainly possible. They have so many good recruiters on that staff that it's – okay, I'm sorry. I got to stop for a second. Somebody just posted that Florida is 126th nationally in red zone offense, down from 125th last season. That is incredible. Yeah, look, LSU has a ton of great recruiters on that staff. They're in a loaded state that also basically – doesn't have anybody else in state who would actually be a threat to them recruiting. So they should always do really well. And you know, Nick Saban has talked about how great of a recruiting spot LSU is. It's in a great spot. I will say this year, Florida State is being helped by the seasons that Florida and Miami are having, right? If Florida or Miami had actually been able to put together a good season while Florida State had a disappointing season, perhaps they could have seized some of the in-state recruit momentum. But at this point, Florida State's main competition for a lot of the kids in state are actually out of state schools, be it Alabama or Georgia or Clemson or LSU. The two in state schools are not consistently beating FSU for prospects.
Interesting. Not all that surprising, but we've talked a little bit about how the administration in Gainesville has never really gotten that. You know, you've talked about the first-year bump that Kirby Smart is experiencing at Georgia and how well they've done and some of the excitement that existed around that program, particularly earlier in the recruiting cycle. That never seemed to really fully come together for McElwain and that staff. So interesting to see how they do. They're recruiting at a little bit of a higher level this year, but never really got those two – the kind of momentum classes, your first two classes where you really have a chance to come in and sell kids on change and the ability to play and that you're going to be the kids that, you know, that brings this program back or reestablishes or whatever the pitch is going to be. So we'll continue to look at Miami and Florida and how they do. And obviously they cross over with Florida State as much as anybody on the recruiting trail. Good little look there nationally and regionally, but let's go ahead and move into quarterback or rather position specific conversation. And with that, we'll start at quarterback. Florida State loses Sean McGuire. You've got two guys in Malik Henry and JJ Constantino that, could go either way, could decide that they want to play football, could decide that they want to play football at a place other than Florida State. So you've got a little bit of uncertainty at this position in general. On the board, you've got the local product, at least for me, Bailey Hockman out of Powder Springs, McEachern High School, and then the kid that they got out of Glade Central, James Blackman. So currently those are your two on your board, and you have to think that Florida State is more or less done at the quarterback position.
Yeah, I like the two prospects that they got. Now, I don't necessarily think that either of them are nationally elite five-star types. They don't really seem to be in on any of those kids as far as actually getting interest from this year. The quarterback situation for next year is interesting because, look, you do lose Sean McGuire, obviously. He's gone after he's a senior. Malik Henry wasn't out there for warm-ups, we didn't see him on the sideline again against Boston College. And I think that's the second time this year post-suspension that we haven't seen him. So it leaves you to wonder, you know, is he suspended again and again? It's hard to believe he's getting much out of his true redshirt freshman year, right? A lot of people, I think, expected him, including myself, to maybe challenge for the job in 2017, back when he first enrolled. But now I do not. I don't think that he has much of a shot of unseating Francois. The question becomes, if he doesn't, do you think a California kid with a lot of issues sticks around to be a backup? I don't know. And then Constantino, who Fisher rips this kid regularly whenever he gets put into a game and he doesn't play well and he's not good. You still kind of maybe need him to stick around to be a backup, at least for one more year almost, because otherwise – the only guys you're going to have on the roster are, assuming that he signs, Blackman and Hockman. And Blackman is still being heavily pursued by Louisville and West Virginia. And if you're Louisville, the way you pitch this kid is pretty clearly come sit behind Lamar Jackson for a year and then you're going to play.
Yeah, you got a real clear and defined sales pitch. And that
Francois might be the starter for three more years after this year, man. He's, you know, he's not very accurate and he's not tall. So I don't think he's like a kid who would leave early for the NFL. You know, so if you're looking for early playing time, I'm sure that's how Louisville's pitching that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, I'm sure they're pitching that. They're pitching a guy who has a decent chance to go to New York and win the Heisman. And anytime you get to watch that and be able to have some sense of reality when projecting yourself to be able to take that over within a year, that's a hell of a sales pitch, and be interested to see how much it resonates with Blackman. Bailey Hockman, anything to be concerned about there? Kid from Metro Atlanta, previously had committed to Georgia. I know Georgia is not particularly involved, but has he shut it down with Florida State involved? Or
yeah, as far as I know, yes. We also got a question about Sam Ellinger, the Texas commit. There was some thought that if the Shane Buechele kid had an awesome year, maybe he would think he would never get to play in Austin. Mm-hmm. But Buechele's been, you know, good and bad. I don't think Florida State's still on him all that hard. I could check on that. I probably should have done that before the show, but I think FSU's done at quarterback, and I don't think anybody's really pursuing Hockman at this point. By the way, did you see Lamar Jackson's Heisman odds?
Yes, I've seen them fairly recently.
1-50.
Gonna have to put down a decent amount of money to make anything off that. Yeah, that's tough.
I mean, at most sites, you can't lay more than 10,000 on the Heisman. So good luck getting some money back on that. Yeah. Oof.
Getting some money back, or maybe more appropriately, seeing a back going and getting some money. Florida State, in all likelihood, loses Dalvin Cook. In all likelihood, that's funny. So let's go ahead and move to the running back position. You've got the Laybourne kid who will always be remembered for integrating a Lamborghini into his commitment or decision-making process, in my opinion, and well done on you there for him. Zachondre White is a running back that we've talked about for a decent amount of time out of North Fort Myers, if I remember correctly. And then the main target, the main point of conversation that we've discussed as far as a national prospect remains the kid out of Mississippi, Cam Akers, who we've covered on this podcast fairly consistently for 6 months or so. So, Bud, just give us an idea as far as what you see at the running back position and what the board looks like for Florida State as they enter into the final 2 or 3 months here.
Yeah, interesting to see what the rest of the running back position will look like for Florida State after Dalvin goes. You know, does Ryan Green stick around, or does he grad transfer out in hopes of playing somewhere? You know, I root for him. He's been pretty selfless at Florida State, switching positions. Can't really seem to get on the field, but you know he has some talent. Maybe it would be smart for him to transfer out and go somewhere. You know, does Jonathan Vickers stay around despite the fact he doesn't get much playing time? He's a local kid, so maybe he doesn't want to leave home. Don't know. Look, big fan of Laybourne and White. I think those are two excellent backs and two really good takes. Laybourne I love his vision, man, and his natural feel for playing the position. He has great instincts, more of a home run hitter. White is a bigger back, not quite Jacques Patrick big, but he does run big. Like, he doesn't try to juke everybody out all the time. But he's definitely good at isolating a half man and attacking through the shoulder there. Runs with good balance, good power, good leverage, good bend. I like him a lot, too. Obviously, get to see him a good bit since he's, you know, very local to me. But yet, they still have one more target left. Cam Akers, you're either number one or number two back in the country, depending on your opinion. Out of Mississippi, he's also considering LSU, Alabama, Ole Miss, and maybe still Ohio State, according to some. A lot of people think this is an LSU-FSU battle. Alabama's trying to get in, but they have so many backs, man. That's hard to get carries there. Ole Miss, they think they're still in it. Look, he's an early enrollee. I don't really think he's going to sign with Ole Miss because of the uncertainty of the NCAA situation. Also, the fact that Ole Miss really doesn't run the football at all is probably
I would think that would be in the back of his head. Yeah. That's
now their contention is that they don't run it because they don't have any elite backs to give it to.
Okay. Kids can make their own decision as far as how much stock they decide to put into that. But in general, if you want to run the football, you'll find the way. And hard to imagine the University of Mississippi doesn't have a kid on its roster that's talented enough to give it at least some kind of presence in the running game.
Totally. I think Florida State has a decent chance of signing Akers. Now, would I make them the favorite? I don't know. But if you follow the visits, he certainly brought his family to Tallahassee a number of times. That's not a short trip. I think you got to like where FSU is as of early November.
Brewster's been heavily involved, I know, here, done a good job in establishing the relationship. We have some people, Bud. We actually have our producer who happens to have some loose ties to Akers, and evidently Florida State's done a really good job here. So, like you said, they've put themselves in a good as position possible, and this is one of the kids that Florida State really does have to land as far as having the conversation go from good to very good or a great recruiting class. So Akers is somebody we've spent a good amount of time on, not just this morning, but historically when we've looked at Florida State, we'll continue to monitor that situation and keep you updated. But Akers is kind of one of the more defining prospects that are out on the board that Florida State has a real legitimate chance to close with. So with that, you want to shift our attention to wide receivers and maybe tight ends?
Let's do that. Yeah. Florida State this year, they're going to lose Kermit Whitfield. They're going to lose Bobo Wilson. Some people think that Travis Rudolph's going to go pro early. I think that would be a big time mistake. Should probably come back to school. I don't think he'd be if he went pro early, do you think he would be drafted in the top four or five rounds?
I don't think that's going to go well for him going pro early, man. Some of the things I don't know that you can improve on in a year, but he's got an awful lot that needs to be worked on. And I know, you know, a lot of people still look at him as a five-star wide receiver. That kid just hasn't come to fruition as far as that. So I don't think he's somebody that's going to blow doors at the combine or in physical workouts. He wouldn't get invited to the combine this year in all likelihood. I think he needs to come back and have a year where he has a real season and is consistent. You know, Rudolph statistically has always been impressive, but it's because, you know, he's put up 238 yards against Syracuse one day or something. It's just not game in, game out. It's never come to fruition for Rudolph, and I think he would be pretty wise to return for another year and try to put that together in his fourth year on campus.
So Florida State doesn't necessarily need to take that many receivers this year. You know, they are losing two seniors, obviously, but, you know, other than that, most of their pass catchers are kind of young. I mean, Tate is going to be a junior next year. Phillips will be a junior next year. I think Campbell got a redshirt, so he'll be a redshirt sophomore. You know, Nyquan Murray will be a junior. I think they would like to take two receivers, assuming the other one's a big guy. They already have DJ Matthews, who is a ultra-talented slot, and I don't think there's any slot in the country I would take over him. I know some people have Tajon Lindsey rated over him, but I've seen them both in person several times, and I would prefer DJ Matthews. And I think people know that I don't try to homer it up with the Florida State commits. You know, if I see somebody else I like better, I'll say it. But I do think DJ Matthews is better than Tajon Lindsey. And so that's great to have the number one slot. They're looking for somebody who can be more of an outside player at the spot. And kind of mixed returns. You know, Nico Collins, receiver out of Alabama, chalkful, is most people think Alabama or Michigan there. Henry Rugg and Collins is visiting for the Florida game, so they'll have a chance to make their mark. Obviously, your receivers coach, Lawrence Dawsey, is from Alabama. Henry Ruggs is your other kid from Alabama. I know that several people think he's a silent to Alabama, but he continues to show interest in Florida State. We always say follow the visits. He's been down a couple times. Now, pulling up here, if I'm Florida State, the one thing I'm telling kids, if I'm recruiting against Alabama, and that's really hard to do, and Bama doesn't really recruit, it more just picks and chooses. I'm looking at the receiving numbers here for the Tide, and, man, they don't really throw the ball around all that much. It's you don't have a lot of guys on this team getting catches. So this is the pitch I'm using if I'm Florida State. And I don't know if you want to consider this negative recruiting. I think it's more comparative recruiting. Ardarius Stewart has 683 yards. Calvin Ridley has 546. The next receiver on the team has 9 catches. The next kid after that has 9. Mm-hmm. Next kid after that has 9. They don't have another receiver with double-digit catches on the year. They don't really rotate their guys in very much, and they don't really play a whole lot of 4 and 5 receiver sets. If you're a receiver, you know, do you really want to go play in that? I don't know. Maybe you do. It's Alabama, so they'll probably get him anyway, but I know Florida State's trying to get one of those two kids. They're also in on Donovan Peoples-Jones. Again, I don't see him getting away from Michigan, but he seems to be interested in the Florida school somewhat, so got to put him on there. At tight end, Florida State has Alexander Marshall, who's an impressive-looking tight end out of Massachusetts, and they're also in on Trey McKitty, who Ingram is an Oregon commit, and I think if you could rewind and go find it, I think we both said at the time we don't think he's going to stick with Oregon when he made his commitment there over the summer, and that was before Oregon had its worst season in like 30 or 40 years. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a chance Florida State can end up landing McKitty. I don't see him sticking with his Oregon commit.
Interesting. Yeah, that's something we'll continue to watch. The talent and the numbers that Florida State have given tight end over the past couple years is interesting and I think a little bit telling as far as what they ultimately want to do as an offensive unit, and McKitty would be a hell of a second addition. So we'll continue to look at tight end, wide receiver. I'll just circle back real quickly. Whenever I talk to people, whether it be people who work for Clemson recruiting sites, Georgia, people who follow Tennessee in a paid capacity, everybody, as soon as they talk about Florida State's class, if it's not the first kid that comes out of their mouth, it's the second. DJ Matthews, you're not being a homer. That is a kid that everybody nationally is blown away by and asked me what type of impact they think he can have his freshman year. Now, it's a little bit complicated with the way that Florida State incorporates their wide receivers, but that is as good as anybody in the nation, particularly when projecting as a slot wide receiver. And when you look at that and you talk about possibly having the best guy in the country, it's nobody's looking through garnet and gold glasses. So if you're just a kind of a lay follower of recruiting or follow it from a distance, that's a kid you can circle and look and watch and see how he's incorporated next year. It's as talented as anybody in the nation and as talented as anybody that Florida State's going to bring in. So with that, we'll transition our talk to the offensive line. But you lose Kareem R. Maybe Rick Leonard decides that he's not wanting to play offensive tackle. Maybe he decides that he does. There's a little bit of uncertainty as far as what you'll have.
Maybe Rod Johnson goes pro. It's not a big time year for offensive tackles. So if I was him, I'd probably go pro. Like I know if the SHU fans don't want to hear that, but you know, I think there's going to be some things going into this decision. It's not a great year for tackles. I know the NFL draft scout, to the extent you follow the Bleacher Report guy, and look, they all make mistakes. He said that there's no offensive lineman worthy of a top 10 pick this year. Now, that may be true, but you know the teams overreach for certain positions, and offensive tackle is one of them.
Mm-hmm.
It, you know, maybe next year's a really good year for tackles. I would probably come out considering the weak class, but who knows? Maybe he'll decide to stay. If he does, that would certainly help because he's their best offensive lineman by a pretty good margin. Florida State took a huge class of offensive linemen last year, so it's not a big-time position of need this year. I know fans will be all up in arms about that, but that look, you got to consider recruiting is kind of a 2 or 3 year window, and last year they took, what, six?
Yeah, so, six kids. You need a little bit of spacing there, absolutely.
They have Brady Scott this year out of Kennesaw, who is real tight with your QB, your Georgia QB commit. I think he profiles as an interior guy. Also a really good baseball player. Kind of an interesting take there. They have some targets. They're looking for a tackle. They need a big tackle. They just got Isaiah Wilson in, your offensive tackle out of New York, for the Boston College game. Seemed to really enjoy that. I know Florida State feels good about that, but at the same time, I mean, I know the Michigan people feel really good too. And he's visiting Georgia, and I think he's visiting Alabama as well. So, you know, I don't know how good you can really feel right now. Georgia's interesting because Georgia needs offensive tackles probably more than Florida State does. I don't know if you got a chance to watch that game against Auburn, but for people who think Florida State's blocking is bad,
Georgia people, the performance of their offensive unit in general, but particularly their line this year has been pretty hilarious. And yeah, that it was nasty. So they've got some kid. They got the Ben Cleveland kid last year. They've got some things that they have hopes as far as how it projects moving forward. But you're right. They have as big of a need as anybody. And just to circle back to the Michigan thing, we talk about the kind of the flag or the presence that Florida State has planted or created for themselves in the mid-Atlantic, Maryland, Virginia in particular. Michigan has maybe not to the extent, not to the time period, but Michigan is recruiting that New York, New Jersey area as well as anybody right now. And that is that's going to be a tough place to go in and beat them on a kid that they're really, you know, have full intentions of signing.
Indeed. And maybe it'll help to have Cremar and Chad Mabity, two guys who they pulled out of New York previously and Jersey. But I don't know. Walker Little, offensive tackle out of Houston, teammate of Marvin Wilson. Interesting there. We'll see. I know he's still high on Stanford, still high on Texas. Going to take, you know, I believe he already took the Georgia visit. Don't really think Clemson's in on him too hard. Should be interesting to see where he goes. Not real confident about Florida State's chances. Think there's some shot Florida State could flip Navon Donaldson, who's an offensive tackle from Miami Central. Currently committed to Miami. Obviously, FSU's had really good success at that school. That's probably it for offensive line. If they don't get one, I don't know if they'll reach out to a lower quality target. They may just stand pat where they are. Defensive line, they've got two kids so far, Jalen Parks and Corey Durden. Cousins out of Newberry, Florida. This is not a good year for defensive line. And I'm not talking just Florida State. I'm talking nationally. Some of these kids who are rated like number one and number two overall on the defensive line would be like fifth or sixth or seventh last year.
Right.
Right. Like that. It's just not a talented year for defensive line compared to the average haul. So it's very good that Florida State got two four-star types in Parks and Durden, already committed. Those are defensive tackles, you know, one of the hardest positions to fill, so that's a very good sign. Now, they're still looking for some ends. They got a kid named Tyler Johnson out of the Phoenix area who has kind of tied to Florida State, getting him in on a visit. They're looking at Jerez Parks out of Sebastian. Granted, I think most people think Jerez Parks is probably Alabama-bound. Again, people really want to bitch about Alabama, and I get it, but I think – if you're going to lose a kid, you probably want to lose him to Alabama because they're already so much more talented than you as opposed to helping out another school. You know what I'm saying? Like, you don't want to lose him to Florida or Miami or Clemson. Sending them up the road to Alabama, whatever. They don't play in the ACC. Jordan Wright out of Dillard High School is another defensive end prospect they're in on. I think they got a pretty decent shot with him. Owen Carney of Miami Central as well. Obviously, I think they got a decent shot at him. And then they got the two kids out of IMG, Josh Kando and Robert Beal, who are committed respectively to Maryland and Georgia. They're trying like heck to make moves on those kids, and we'll see what happens there. You know, they've already visited. I know they're going to visit again, I believe, for the Florida game. So who knows? Maybe they'll go. You know, if your defensive end crop ends up being Wright and Kearney, I don't think you're super happy about that. You didn't get an elite kid to say yes. Granted, there aren't a whole lot of elite kids this year.
That's true. It'll be interesting to see. I know the Beal kid is somebody that they've had aspirations of for a while, and that is a kid committed to Georgia. So we'll watch that. We'll continue to monitor it. You mentioned that they will be on hand or on site for the Florida game. And yeah, I mean, that gives you a chance, particularly if that may be a night game like some reports had yesterday, surfacing that would be a good environment and a good atmosphere as any, despite, you know, not having a sterling record and kind of the period of time that Florida game falls on. It's not necessarily when you have a full student body on campus, et cetera. It's still the Florida game. It's still a chance for Florida State to put a big step forward. And but I'll tell you what, for our listenership, it may be an opportunity to experience what Madison Social and the guys at Centrale are doing right now.
Yeah. Now, Ingram, check this out. Our friends at Madison Social and Centrale are doing something great here for brunch. If you go on Saturday or Sunday and you go to Madison Social and you get their house-made spiced apple cider mimosa, which actually that sounds really good, especially on, you know, the weather's starting to turn a little bit. You can still sit on the outdoor patio. It's getting a little bit cooler, but it's boot season. Then you walk on over to Centrale. You can get their sorbetta, blood orange sherbet, champagne. That sounds pretty good, man. I'm not down on that. You'll get two drinks, and it's on the house.
Yes, most importantly. Absolutely. Love what you did there with boot season. I caught that. Well done, sir. Absolutely. As we move on, linebacker Bud, doesn't appear as though Florida State will lose anybody, at least to traditional attrition. You could have somebody decide to go pro, which may not be their best decision, but maybe they feel the need to. Maybe you lose somebody with an injury over the course of the year. Just a lot of guys at linebacker whose career just hasn't played out probably the way that they thought it would have when they signed with Florida State. And whenever that's the chance, you have some attrition. But I don't know that there's anybody in particular that we could really highlight as a possible departure. So with that, you've got two kids committed. The Derek Brooks' son. You got the legacy commitment there, and then DeMarco Artist at a Seminole, Florida.
Yeah, now Artist could be like an edge rusher type, you know, more of like a Jacob Pugh, but I also think he may have the chance to play as a regular linebacker. DeKalen Brooks, obviously the son of Derek Brooks. I talked about him before. I don't think he is an elite level prospect at all, but he's kind of just fringy enough to, when you add the fact that his dad is Derek Brooks, who was on FSU's, you know, Board of Trustees for a while and was, you know, Hall of Famer, that you take him. I'm actually really encouraged about where Florida State is with their young linebackers. If you think about it, you're probably going to get Matthew Thomas back, assuming that he is going to have grades to come back, or Derek Hoskins is going to come back. Mm. Now, what do you do with Delvin Purifoy? Is he ever actually going to get anywhere close back to form with the devastating, you know, leg ankle injury there? Don't know. Might want to medically disqualify him. Shamar Kilby Lane, will he become academically eligible again? Again, don't know. But, you know, Josh Brown, Emmett Rice, Dontavius Jackson, I think you got to be very encouraged there by that trio. You add DeMarco Artis, you add DeKalen Brooks, who can play sort of that money role that Nate Andrews plays. And then you're kind of star chasing, you know, with the Baron Browning out of Texas. I don't think FSU will get him. Leonard Warner out of Georgia. Again, don't really think FSU will get him either. But they're, you know, they're swinging for the fences there. Some people think they should take one more kid, and we'll have to see if that's something they need to do as far as reaching for perhaps a lesser talented body. But I don't know that they actually need to do that. That's kind of where they are on defense right now. A lot of speculation as to whether the linebackers coach will actually be back next year. So
I was going to mention that as well. Yeah, that's something to watch, and that may have as much to do with what the future of your linebacker unit has or looks like as much as any particular kid. The Warner kid, everything that I've heard here locally, I don't expect that to be Florida State. Maybe things change, but good luck getting that kid out of Brookwood. So, Bud, with that, we'll move our attention to the defensive back. Marquez White, you will lose. Probably maybe see one or two other people just from general attrition. Malik Jackson doesn't look like he's going to get to play. That's unfortunate. Bones Jackson would have loved for that nickname to really had a chance to see some real legitimate playing time. But what you look like in the secondary, you know, obviously Stanford Samuels is your five-star commitment and the guy that most people have in the back of their mind when they look at this class as far as upper elite talent. I'd say probably DJ Matthews and Stanford Samuels are the two that immediately come to mind. He still had some conversation with Georgia. I think he was there last weekend. Did he make it up for the Auburn game? I believe they thought they were going to get him in anyway. So is that a kid that's still in play, or where do you think Florida State sits with Samuels Jr. currently?
Well, look, I still like where Florida State is with Samuels Jr. We always say follow the visits, and he has visited Georgia a number of times. I mean, he's also been to Florida State. Like, you know, he was basically born there. So I like where they are with him still. I think you got to watch out for Georgia a little bit. Georgia has a bunch of momentum on the recruiting trail. They've got an awesome class they're putting together. And I, you know, if Kirby Smart can coach, I mean, they're going to do something there because they're bringing in a boatload of talent. But yeah, I think overall it's still Florida State for him. Now, Cyrus Fagan, Daytona seems like he's very much locked into FSU, one of the best safeties in the country. Daniel Wright, also one of the best safeties in the country, a Florida State commit. Now, a lot of people think Alabama may have flipped him this weekend and are kind of waiting for him to make that announcement that he's going to flip to Alabama. I'm not for sure on that, but I think we need to note that because you may be listening to this podcast, and by the time you listen to this, who knows, maybe he's already flipped. If they do lose him, I think they would try to make a move on like a Dorian Hall of Hollywood, Florida. He plays for South Broward. We talked about him over the summer. He was at Florida State summer camp. I think FSU wanted to continue to evaluate him at the time. But if you were to lose Daniel Wright, maybe you make a move on Hall. Corner's a spot where I'm interested to see what FSU does. Because they took Carlos Becker last year and Levante Taylor and Kyle Myers. And those kids are playing well. Becker is, you know, playing safety now, but certainly could play some corner if you needed him to. Do you absolutely have to take a second corner in this class? I think you'd probably like to. They're trying to go after, you know, Jeffrey Okuda, who's Texas, but he's really from Jersey. I think he's all Ohio State. And also Hamza Nasruldeen, not a corner, but perhaps a safety or linebacker. He's North Carolina, a South Carolina commit, though. Still trying to talk to him some. I'm interested to see how this cornerback board develops. That's one of my top things I'll be watching. Do they expand the board if they realize that they're not going to get Okuda? Maybe. You know what I realized?
What's that?
We didn't talk defensive tackles. Top target is obviously Marvin Wilson, DT out of Houston area, Episcopal High School. And guess what? He's also the top target of like Texas and Oklahoma and Alabama and LSU and a number of other top schools. You know, he's visited a couple times. That's kind of all you can ask for with a kid like that, I guess, at that point, an out-of-state kid. I will note that I don't think he's on the level of last year's number one or number two or number three defensive tackles. Last year was a much better class than this year. Also, Jordan Scott out of the Tampa area. Now, he recently decommitted from Florida. Now, some Florida people will tell you that Florida dropped him and that he's now 380 pounds at like 5'11 and a half. That may be true, actually. Like, I haven't seen him in person since the summer.
It's 5'11 approaching 400 pounds. That is, those are some interesting dimensions on a high school senior.
Yeah, so I don't know if that's true or not. I'm going to try and dig on that some. I know FSU, or like he, I think he tweeted something pro FSU or did the chop at one of his games or something, but I who knows? That's kind of where recruiting is right now. I'll be looking to see if they expand the cornerback board. I want to see what they do at the defensive end position, particularly with junior college kids. I think now is the time where you try to throw out a couple more JUCO offers because next year your defensive ends, you know, you lose to Marcus Walker. That hurts. He's a very good player and probably a better college player than an NFL player. So you're going to feel that impact. You may want to try to go out and get a defensive end who can help you and make a more immediate impact.
Anywhere else you're looking as far as the macro theme and how this class closes and how you'll judge it?
I think it's a decent class. Like, is Florida State's recruiting getting better or getting worse or getting static or not, but you know, kind of staying the same? I think it's for the most part staying about the same quality. You know, last year you had more top end kids for sure. And some people thought you signed the number one class in the country. We never went with that. So it's certainly not close to what you had last year. Last year's class was much more talented. If you compare it to like the last 4 years, though, it's not that far off. So they've taken a step back from where they are last year. I do think Jimbo Fisher needs to make a couple firings on this staff. It's not a great recruiting staff, especially not when you compare it to some of the other top staffs out there. But you know, overall, their blue chip percentage is pretty similar to what they had in like 2015, 2014, 2016. In the recent years, looks a little more like an outlier.
Understood. Well, Bud, you know, one thing that I've always thought we've done a particularly good job is the conversation surrounding recruiting, and hopefully people will allow us to be one of their main sources as far as what Florida State's recruiting class looks like. We try to do this to a extent that appeals to a little bit of everybody as far as if you're somebody that's followed this class from 14 months ago or just a diehard recruiting follower or a recruit Nick, or if you're just somebody who kind of wants to consume this from a distance and have an update but kind of shift your focus as the holidays come. And that's when a lot of people start to pay attention to recruiting. So hopefully this is useful to anybody. It's certainly something that we'll continue to do and we'll continue to incorporate more into our conversation as the regular season is starting to wind down. So appreciate your time as always. Always am incredibly appreciative to the people who feel comfortable sharing this through whatever social media form they use or they're most fluent in. And always appreciate the feedback. We've got a couple of really good questions that have been sent to our email address. Want to remind people that is thenolcast@gmail.com. A good place to throw something to us that might be a little bit longer than kind of what's conducive for sending a tweet. So keep that in the back of your mind. Have some questions that we've received that we'll incorporate into a future episode. But just want to thank people for their listenership. And we will, let's see, Bud, we'll have another podcast out this weekend as far as a look back on the game and potentially do a preview episodes in the next couple days.
Ingram, look forward to it. Thanks as always to our sponsors, Louisiana Hot Sauce and Madison Social. The feedback is appreciated as always. And make sure to give us those reviews on iTunes. Got Ingram, we're almost to 450 reviews.
Very nice. And very strong.
Yeah, we if you want to look, hey, you know what our blue chip percentage is on reviews?
I think that's I think we're in the 99 percentile, I believe.
Yeah, we are 0.99551569506. So that's that is really solid. We can round that up. We are better than Bama on the blue chip percentage on our views. So with that, I will talk to you probably Thursday for the preview.
Cool. All right, man. Thank you. If you can't go and leave me now, you know that I love you. There's no one above you. I said it the last time, but this is the last time. But don't make me over, cause I can be faithful. Yeah, baby, you're my number one. You're my number one. Now who is she? What's her name? About this, we fight about that.